Hello, good day, and welcome to Season 6, Episode 4 of the Point 99 Podcast. How are we all getting on? It's no word of a lie when I tell you that I am feeling it this week myself. We'll get into the details on the reasons why over the course of this episode, because as you've probably have expected, especially if you've tuned in over the past few episodes, I'm diving into my experience of the Baxter's Loch Ness Marathon. So no guest once again this week, but we do have plenty to keep your ears filled for the next half an hour to 45 minutes, maybe a little bit longer. Since I'm planning to give you a bit of a blow-by-blow account of how it all panned out over the weekend, recanting details while they're still fresh, especially for anyone who might be interested in considering the event or who might just like a bit more information about running a marathon in their future, wanting to know a little bit more about what it takes to get the job done and everything that goes hand in hand with the process. I'll tell you all of it. First though, the intro, and then we'll dive on in. What is the Point 99 podcast, I hear those new to the show ask? Well, we're a running podcast for every runner of every ability. The show's mission is to help everyone along whatever road their journey might be taking. That might be through relatable guests, unique and inspiring stories, experiences, and the lessons that are shared throughout all of it. Hopefully, by sharing these stories with you, you'll feel inspired and motivated to do amazing things, smash goals, and be the best running version of you. Right, do I have a digest for you or what? As well as covering my marathon story, we're going to be doing a download of achievements and events from the running community, shouting out some responses from the stories that I put up, looking for shout outs, while also looking ahead at what is to come for this coming weekend. Now, before I get into any of the happenings from my weekend's experience, and probably more for the benefit of anyone listening who either hasn't run a marathon before or someone who might want to get a little bit more understanding of what usually goes into training and preparing for a marathon, I'm going to look back to what maybe should have happened from day one of the process before building into my own race day experience. I don't think I've ever actually covered the ins and outs of training for a marathon. I know Ryan looked at it previously with the Press Play and Run podcast, but I thought it was maybe beneficial to sprinkle in some marathon knowledge, some training experience, just for anyone who listening who might not know what actually goes into the whole process. So hopefully this will be beneficial for some of you, but I'll be sprinkling in bits and pieces as to what happened with my training process, that things that you might encounter that may be stumbling blocks and just obstacles that you have to overcome. So typically, we can start off by saying that the average runner, you or I, will undertake a 16-week training program. Although, if you've listened back to previous episodes and previous seasons, you might remember that I've not always done that, but for more recent marathons, I have. The 16-week training program should really consist of a structured approach to training with weekly targets and a variety of different sessions, speed sessions, fartlek, those sorts of things, just to mix things up. Although, again, talking from my experience, I tend to only really do intervals very rarely. It's mostly just time on feet for me. The approach that I've used in the past has been 12 weeks through to 16 weeks. But like I say, more laterally, 16-week training programs have been my go-to and have worked so much better, even if it is a long old time that you kind of have to find the time to put to training, but it all works out for the better. I'd also say it's kind of typically 16 weeks, as sometimes life can get in the way of a session or two. So you might get two or three runs done a week. Maybe you'll get five runs done a week. It all comes down to what works best for you. In my case, I did lose a lot of time this time around, but that is just life, and we're going to get to that as we move forward through what the process might be. When it comes to looking at the 16-week training program, that program will be what is best for you, your targets, your goals, and ultimately your race result desires. It's not a one-shoe-fits-all approach by any means. What works for me likely won't work for you, as is the case with most things in your running journey. You may also find that signing up to a companion app that will help identify a suitable plan if you don't know how to write one yourself or know what might work for you. It may be for the best, Coupa, Runner, Kaizen, those sorts of apps. And they're very popular. They don't really cost that much. You may also want to get yourself a coach though, just whatever works best for you. In the run-up for the Baxter's Loch Ness Marathon, I wasn't able to commit to a proper training structure myself. Work got in the way in quite a number of ways, and management put a lot of pressure on me working longer days than I'd personally have liked, which ultimately impacted my program. There were a lot of sessions that I couldn't do. There were whole weeks where I didn't get a single run ticked off. That is, like I say, a fact of life. Ultimately, no employer really cares about what it takes to run a marathon, everything that goes into the training. It is really down to us to keep on top of all of that where we can. Now, I'm really lucky that I have a fairly high level of fitness just now. So the lost sessions or two didn't necessarily impact me as much as it might have done previously. Having the Loch Ness 24 was also critical in testing my core strength and abilities, and the main reason I didn't panic about lost sessions or weeks from the program. But for you, let's say that it all does go to plan. Each week you build up your distance, you get more time on feet, you take deload weeks, you do some strength, you do some conditioning. You'll notice there's a massive change from week 1 through to week 16. You'll feel very tired though, but you will feel stronger, fitter, and faster than you ever have before. You may by this point also feel sick of feeling hungry all the time, but that is just part of the course. Like I say, I lost a lot of time due to the job that I currently do. I was doing a lot of long, tiring days, and there's nothing less appealing than knowing that you should be heading out for a 10K, 15K, 20K run when you're tired. Making the wise decision to sack off a session to save going out tired and potentially getting an injury from being fatigued is sometimes the wisest decision that you can make. Although, as runners, we don't always make the wise decision, but in this instance, I had to be very aware of everything going on and the achievements that I wanted to get. So yeah, I had to sack off quite a lot and save any injury. So honestly, don't worry too much if you don't feel up to a run or two. It's not gonna majorly impact you unless, like I say, you're missing weeks of training and you don't feel up to the final race day. If, however, you do carry quite a high level of fitness and you're used to running marathons by now or longer distances, it shouldn't really impact you too much. And as I've already hinted at, sure, you'll be eating more than you've ever eaten before, but that's normal. Your body needs it for the recovery and to prepare itself for the final test to come. In week 16, your final week of training, you'll be sick of eating as you carb load, or at least I usually do, and I did this time around. That's the way I felt, sick of eating and ready to get out on the course. But it is really important to pack in the pasta, the pizza, the bread. Just remember, come the night before the marathon, try and keep fatty meats and cheeses away from your diet. That can result in a little bit of an upset tummy in the morning. But yeah, just get all those carbs loaded and then that last minute carb load on the night before. Also, on the night before the race, you'll probably be checking out your equipment, doing a flat lay, getting an Instagram post up if you're anything like me, and just making sure that you have everything that you need. You'll likely check it several times, and at this point, you stick to what has worked for you over the last 16 weeks. Don't change anything It'll just come back to bite you on the bum. And most importantly, get it all packed away and try your best to get a good night's sleep. This last 16 weeks, you're not going to change that. You've done the time, you've done your program, you've put in all the effort that you can put in. All you need to do is try and relax, get some rest, and be the most recovered you can be come the start line. Ideally, on the run up to the marathon, or at least the week of the marathon, you want to keep your steps down to a minimum, resting your legs and keeping your energy expenditure low. You don't do what myself and Stuart Rowan. Stuart runs a lot. That he does did and go to park run and set a fairly fast 5K the day before, then get thousands of steps in on top of those. I say that, but I did get over 30,000 steps done the day before Amsterdam, but I certainly didn't go for a run, that's for sure. The difference this time around was that Stuart was keen on ticking off Alness Park Run, my home park run, off while he was in the area. And I'm a sucker for caving to no pressure at all when I have a friend in the area that is up for running with me. So yeah, we went down to Alness Park Run. Maybe wasn't the best decision, but I mean, we had fun. That's the main thing. No matter where your event is located, you're going to have a bit of travel and transport to consider. For the Baxter's Loch Ness Marathon, runners are required to take a bus to the start line. It's a A to B marathon. It's not a circular one, which the organisers do put on and runs fairly seamlessly. It does mean that you have a really early start for Loch Ness, as the buses set off at 7:30 and you've got to be there for 7 or as close to it as you can be. There's travel on top of that for some people. My morning started at 5 in the morning because I had some preparations to do, obviously get some food in, hydration. But I was lucky enough to have my brother take myself and Stuart Rowan down to the collection point where we met with Pita, who was undertaking her very first marathon. She had an hour drive on top of her early start as well, because she was staying in a place called Granton and Spey, just because the hotel prices were like astronomic in Inverness, or just not available in some cases. Regardless of if your event has transport to the start line or not, you do want to be there with plenty of time. That goes for all things, though. You might have to take a tram, a bus, you might have to walk there. You want to be able to get there in plenty of time to center yourself, to get any last minute toilet visits out of the way, get your bags packed, get them into the shelters, the stores, the lorries, wherever you're putting your luggage. And most importantly, give yourself time to settle any pre-race jitters. For myself, Stuart and Petta, the bus journey was roughly 1 hour. There was a lot of general nervous chatter, first timers asking about the route, people talking about how training had gone, anything to take the mind off of what was to come. I personally had sat myself down to a young lady who was looking a little bit nervous, but she was lovely. It turned out she was looking for a similar time as myself. We're going to get to her in a little bit, but she did put up with my rubbish banter for the whole way, so kudos to her on that. The starting area itself was actually really well prepared by the time we'd arrived. There was plenty of toilets, plenty of baggage trucks, the stuff that you'd expect from a well put together and well organized event by a competent event organizer. Although there were plenty of toilets, all the buses arrived en masse. They were in a bit of a convoy, so everyone kind of descended upon them at once. Like I say, it was a very, very long queue. It was full of lighthearted banter, and it did move along at quite a decent rate once it got going. I should possibly have said by this point, or the day before, we'd all collected our race numbers from the event village, which has been the case for half the marathons I've done in the past. Some organisers like to send you your packs with your number, your pins, all the stuff that you need. And in other half have had you collect them. So at the starting area, there were a lot of people stripping down to get their last minute numbers fixed to their clothing, to their race tops, before they got their baggage packed up and onto the tracks. So the Baxters doesn't really have an expo that you could compare to somewhere like London or Amsterdam or any of the majors or platinum events, but it does try its best. It's got a marquee, you make your way through, you get your race number, you then have a series of stalls that have either sponsors or different retailers that have paid to be there. You can make your way through and get a massage. There's a stage with musicians. There was a run cafe for those interested that maybe wanted to speak to or listen to different experienced athletes from across the spectrum. I'm not actually sure who was there this year. I didn't spend any time there. And then there's also an eating area, because after all, it is the Baxters Loch Ness Marathon. So you can get yourself a nice plate of soup. Once you come out, though, there's a nice family area, a lot of different rides, a lot of different stalls, local retailers and vendors, alcohol, food trucks. But like I say, it's not nearly comparable to big events, but it is nice, it's homely, it's welcoming, and it's just that. Runner-wise, there were runners from all corners of the world, as far away as Alaska, New Zealand, South Africa, Argentina, to name a few. You might wonder how I know that. There is a great compere at the event, but also I had heard at the expo some of the places people were coming from. And I think that's the thing that I love about marathons so much. It's how it brings people of all races, nationalities, genders, and basically all walks of life together. You're all in it together, no matter what job you do, no matter how much you earn in life, where you are on your life's journey. It kind of levels the playing field. Obviously, forgetting about things like finishing time or that side of things. You're just there to do the same as everyone else, to be superhuman and to write the next chapter of your legacy. Overall, it was a great start to the day, near perfect conditions. It was basically the best possible start that you could hope or pray for. The sun was shining, the air was crisp. Honestly, it's really the kind of weather that you would hope for. Not too hot, not too cold. My nerves were unusually fairly low, possibly as I was surrounded by friends, both old and new. Like I say, I met a lovely lass, Dr. Amy, on the bus, who was aiming for a similar time as myself and Stuart. From the get-go, arriving at the start, you could feel the energy and the kind of buzz in the air. And like I say, there were a lot of pockets of banter with fellow runners. It was comedy as people went into the bushes. They didn't want to wait in the toilet queue. They tackled the heather to, as the compere said, water the trees, both males and females alike. But you would occasionally see someone fall over, luckily getting a nice soft landing in the heather. So there was bodies everywhere. There's a lot going on. If you like people watching, it's the best place to be. Logistically, like I say, the organizers did everything as best they could, given the rurality of the start. And the compere, the great Brian Burnett, if anyone, especially Scottish people actually, remember a program called Scottish Passport, we mentioned it in the last episode with Grace Nicol. Brian has been at this for years. He comes up to the Baxters, he comes up to the half marathon in Inverness, and he does a fantastic job. He keeps everyone informed about the time that's left before the starting klaxon, when the trucks close, everything that you need to know. Looking back on 2022, when I last did the marathon, or at least the only other time I've done the Baxters Loch Ness Marathon, I couldn't remember there being as many baggage trucks or as many port-a-loos, or it being as slick an operation as it seemed to be this year. But then, like Brian kept saying, it was a record-breaking year for people taking part, so It was all needed and well delivered. I'm going to briefly touch on here what I opted for wearing on race day, and it was my Nike Alphafly 3s. They're a fantastic shoe, but I am going to go on record as saying that they probably weren't the right shoe for the day. They're 1000% a fantastic shoe, but for me, they are better for half marathon distances, and on reflection, I should possibly have stuck with the Vaporfly 3s that I did most of my longer runs in. Of course, I do love my Vapors, but they have also been documented as being a slightly better marathon shoe overall. I just thought, I bought the Alphas, I've done some training in them, they should be the bee's knees, but I don't feel that I got the most out of them, or that I basically got the most out of myself. I maybe could have done more in the Vapors. I also was using Voom Energy Bars. Once again, a great bar, the green one, the citrus one. No real issues there. I just feel that perhaps I could have supplemented a bit more on top of those, which you'll find out about very, very shortly. Otherwise, it was just the general kind of generic gear, short shorts, the podcast t-shirt, and some nice Shayu socks, actually, brand new. That's the only thing I changed on race day. I did get myself some Shayu socks, and they were absolutely bangers, I have to say. Stuart and Ian Runs and Cycles, they know their socks, so I followed suit, and they were fantastic. Well done, boys. Come the start klaxon, the air horn, I was riding nice and high, thanks to Stuart. We had got fairly close to the front in our target time area, and we set off at an incredible pace right from the get-go. I felt in the zone. We were ticking along nicely and having the miles pass by smoothly at a great pace. As I say, set by Stuart, building an all-important buffer for gaining my personal best. Things were looking absolutely fantastic until around about 4 miles, when I first noticed Stuart drop back a little bit. I wasn't entirely aware of it at first because he had been kind of jinking in and out behind me, just trying to find his flow. But it wasn't long after that I noticed that I was now on my own. I didn't have Stuart. Checking my shoulder though, I did notice that I had picked up Dr. Amy, who was pacing off at the back of me. 4 miles is coincidentally where the initial downhill sections turn into uphill sections, where you realize you've been lulled into a false sense of security. You know what they say, what goes down must come back up. At least the other way around normally. Let me tell you, despite all of my past jokes about the course being net flat, it definitely leans towards some pretty sneaky gradients, both up and down, with a few flat sections being few and far between, actually. I may easily have been looking back on 2022 with rose-tinted glasses, thinking it was flatter than it was, but on more fresh eyes and recollection, there was a lot of sneaky little rises up. You could feel it in the legs, and it just felt like you were constantly climbing in some places and never coming back down again. Thankfully, however, things were ticking along fairly nicely for the first two-thirds of the marathon. Got to halfway, felt pretty strong, my pace was spot on, I was clocking up a nice buffer, and I had high hopes actually of getting quite a significant PB. I checked my shoulder, and each time Dr. Amy was generally still there. I was still feeling strong at this point. It didn't take long, however, for things to change. I lost Dr. Amy. It wouldn't be the last time I'd see her, but I was also starting to feel a little bit of discomfort in my legs. So I knew things weren't necessarily right as we approached mile 18. Even some of the people that I was getting used to seeing, they were kind of pacing off of me and I was pacing off of them. They started to fall back a little bit. Things were taking a bit of a turn for everyone. But yeah, like I say, I'd also started to feel a little bit of discomfort in my legs. So by the time I hit the infamous hill at mile 19, a lot of uphill, I knew things weren't necessarily right. And I was right there because that's where the cramp really hit and where it turned into a real battle for the remaining 6 miles as we got to 20 miles. The support from other runners, the spectators, was as always amazing. People not wanting to see you come so far only to come so far. They tried to lift the spirits. It kind of worked. I tried a little bit harder, put more effort in, but I think the more I did that, the more I just frustrated myself. I was a bit audible with my frustrations at some parts, but eventually I did get going again for longer periods of time. I was managing to ride the wave, the pulse of cramp riding up and down the back of my legs, but it was really a slog to get the job done. I said it in my post, it was a really tough day in the office for sure, but you know what? I'm far from disappointed. I totally get that the Insta post that I made can be perceived as fairly negative, but I'm honestly okay with it. Frustrated, but okay. Sometimes it's the challenges that make the finish feel even more sweeter because you're just praying for it to come. Unfortunately, I did have to sacrifice my standard strong sprint finish in fear of passing out. I'd got, at this point, a presumed lack of salt. I think that's what was causing the cramping, but it was also causing lightheadedness and dizziness. So for the last 2-3 kilometers, it was very much damage limitation, trying not to pass it, trying not to be sick. I mustered as much as I could for the last kilometer as we approached the finishing line. It was at that point I was delighted that Dr. Amy managed to catch me, and she did pass. She was still running. It was great to see. She beat her personal best. She is, like I say, a trooper. She put up with my crap banter for the whole bus journey, so she deserved a medal and a PB for that alone. As I arrived at the kind of last sprint finish, I did hear my name being called, firstly by the family, but also by Lee, Elodie, Alex, all my friends. But at this point, I was really focused on just getting over the line, trying not to pass out, like I say, trying not to puke. So I got across the line, I stopped my watch, and I took a seat almost immediately on the curb after the finishing line and just sat there and tried to collect myself, tried to steady myself, very, very lightheaded. It's not a sensation that I've experienced very much in training in the past. It just kind of went to show how much more effort it was to get over the line and how much running a little bit faster can actually take out of you. But you're asking me what the end result was. Well, it was still a 3-minute personal best with a finishing time of 3 hours, 38 minutes and 23 seconds. I have a full belief that I can go sub 3:30 on the right course. It's just about getting training nailed, getting a lot of rest and not being tired, and more importantly as well, maybe getting some salt tablets to make sure that lack of salt doesn't happen again. Regardless of everything that happened, the job was done, a PB was secured, and I finished 572nd out of 3,731 finishers in the marathon, so that ain't half bad. There's certainly nothing to be disappointed about, and I am definitely not. I did say in the last few weeks that I would try be more positive, and that's what I'm being. I'm not the same person I was when I finished my first marathon, or my second marathon, or my third marathon for that matter. I know when to take the wins and to move on, celebrating wherever I can and whatever I can. For Stuart, well, he'd be the first to tell you that it wasn't the day in the office he was hoping for. He really did have to dig deep, but he got it done. It was a really respectable time, especially coming back from injury. The task was always going to be tough. It was a very tough course, but he really helped me a lot and likely sacrificed his own day for my sakes. I luckily had the pleasure of getting a spot of lunch, or at least I treated him to a spot of lunch the next day before he headed back down the road, having already secured his place in the Inverness Half Marathon in March, because obviously there's nothing that wants you to do another visit to Inverness than having a really tough day in the office at the marathon. But really, he did do an amazing job, which I wanted to kind of continually reinforce to him over lunch. He was beating himself up quite a bit during the marathon, and I think subsequently as well, but it's a really tough course. I can't kind of convey that enough. And honestly, I had forgotten how tough it really was, so I couldn't necessarily tell people that on the run-up to the event. The Loch Ness Monster is real. It's plural, in fact. They're just hills, not prehistoric water lizards. So I know Stuart will be listening, and I'm going to keep saying it to him. He did a fantastic job. He was coming back from injury. Sure, training seems to have been going well, but it was always going to be a massive effort to get the marathon done. But honestly, mate, thank you so, so much for setting such an amazing pace at the beginning and giving me the best opportunity to get a PB, which I did, and which is all down to you, my man. The lovely Petta as well. What a lady. She absolutely smashed it. She cracked the distance and has now joined the 0.01% club, claiming the bragging rights that go along with it. To complete a marathon is hard enough, but to do it on such a tough course, like I said with Stuart, no matter how scenic, welcoming or historic, it's going to far outweigh the effort that you do on some of the other marathons that are a little bit more straightforward. So if she can do that, she can do pretty much any marathon in my books. She seems to have enjoyed herself from the brief chats that I've had with her, the images she stuck up. She got a few running buddies along the way, I think. She found people of similar pace. The hills were tough, she has said that, but she was still smiling, more importantly, as she headed back down the road, medal in hand. So mega congratulations, Pet. And it was lovely to finally meet you after all the tomfoolery and joking and everything that's gone into our connection through the podcast. Hopefully next time I'll get to spend a little bit more time with you. You'll stay a little bit closer to the event start line, no matter where it is, and we'll just have a good old time of it. Finally, from my race day memory perspective, we have previous guest and friend to the show, Sarah Homer. What a lady she is. She absolutely nailed what she was going for through and through, scored an amazing finish, 3 hour, 22 minute and 42 second finishing time. It was, of course, a PB that saw her secure 26th female out of 1,369 starters, or maybe finishers in this respect. So what a mega achievement that is. From her photos, she looked super fresh by the end of it. So I wouldn't write her off having even more in her tank to go a little bit faster. But there you go. There's so many BQs, QQs, whatever, qualifying times right there with a 3:22.42. An amazing performance executed so well by a super strong, talented young lady. I'm looking forward to seeing what Sarah's going to put herself up for next. But if she can crack the Loch Ness Monster marathon with that time, then there's no stopping her. But all in all, what a day. I'm not sure what else to say about it. It was really tough, and I've said that a few times, but it was. It was probably tougher than the Loch Ness 24 Ultra, but they're two totally different games. Speed over distance. For me, speed is always going to be a little bit harder than distance, but yeah, it is what it is. We are where we are, and PBs were secured. No disappointment. Elsewhere in the Marathon Festival, we had Lee Campbell, Elodie Petit, Fran Stewart, Alex McDonald, who bagged an absolutely amazing PB, and of course, last week's guest, Grace Nicol. They were all taking part in the 10K, and by all accounts, everyone had a great time of it. Lee bagged himself the trilogy of medals. So he's done the marathon in the past and he's done the 5K. So now ticking off the 10K, he's got the trilogy. I'm waiting to see that one appear in the rest of the tattoos. Elodie herself, she nearly got a PB on a training run. That was a training run for her. But also she got caught in Grace's finish line photos, giving her such a look. I don't think it was intentional, but I honestly near died with laughter when Grace shared her finishing photos with me and I spotted Elodie in the background. For Grace, she did everything she set out to do and much more. She bagged an awesome 55-minute 10K in her first official race. I have joked with her that she's going to go one better this weekend at the AJ Bell Great Scottish 10K, but she assures me that will not be happening. At this point, I think it's important to move on to the community responses to these stories that I put up. And I will openly ask at this point as well, if you have any questions about the marathon or the 10K, I'm going to stick up a story, ask away anything that you feel that I might have missed through the duration of that fairly whirlwind chat, easy for me to say, whether it's about training for a marathon, whether it's about the marathon itself or about the 10K, because I am very familiar with that one, having taken part and volunteered at that in the past myself. I'll kick things off though with the responses I received for the Loch Ness events before moving on to other races from the weekend, and we'll finish off with a look ahead to things to come for the coming days. Firstly, we have the bearded Highland runner, Duncan Cameron, who was doing a self shout out on achieving a personal best over the 10K distance by going all out from the start. Duncan is delighted with his PB, but he does say, don't do as he did. I'm pretty sure the whole going out as if Mike Myers is chasing you with a chainsaw and clinging on for dear life is an approach that many of us actually adopt on race day. So yeah, don't do as he did, but well, maybe it'll work for you. We had Ultra Linny, whose name you'll hear fairly soon as well, shouting out her pal, the marathoner. Again, the lady whose name has come up and will come up again, Petta. That was also echoed by her other lovely pal, Curly Steph, who was shouting out Petta for running her very first marathon. She's super proud of all that she's accomplished. Lee Campbell joined in to shout out someone I can happily assure him has already been covered and he would have heard it already, but Sarah Homer. It was such a great picture of Sarah spotting the cheer squad, spotting Lee, Elodie, Alex in the crowd as they made a ton of noise, excuse my French. It's one that I would hope that she'll be framing and getting on the wall. It's, a fantastic photo. She looks amazing, just full of energy as she crossed the line. Lovely TJ from across the pond wanted to shout out not only myself and Stuart, thank you very much, my lovely, but also Rachel Spicy on the Run, who popped up to Loch Ness to also conquer the monster. And at this point, I can also say, yes, Miss Petit, you do get a shout out. You've already had one, but you get an extra little one there for asking so nicely. He'll be back in just a sec, but Jimmy Bunter kindly wanted to shout myself out for my PB and the hard work that I put into the marathon, insisting that I thoroughly deserve it. Thank you very much, Jimmy. You are really, really kind. And like I've said in the past, he's just life's, or at least one of life's good guys. You are far too kind, my man. Nikki Sheridan added the lovely Helen Running Mum, a lady that I've been at so many of the same events as, but I've yet to meet in person. Nick was shouting out Helen for running a massive 19-minute PB. That's mega given the course. She also added Lee, Elodie and Alex for their 10K efforts and Stuart for going the distance and keeping it going in the marathon. She does finish by saying she's probably forgotten some folk there. So yeah, Nick, if you're listening, I'm not going to say anything there, okay? Stuart runs a lot. That he does, of course. He's shouting out another marathon that was taking place at the weekend, or at least his clubmate Joanne Thorburn on completing the Berlin Marathon. She has hopefully done enough to secure a Boston qualifier for 2026 in the process. So congratulations, Joanne. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed. That is a mega time that you put there. Yeah, I would love to be running at that pace. Away from the Baxters and Berlin, though, we're going to look briefly at another event that was taking place with a shout out before we look ahead to things to come this weekend. The legend of the shout out responses, he's already been in it, Jimmy Bunter, James Gow, is shouting out his fellow Insta Runners Roundup podcast pal and the man that he was crewing over the start of the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Mike Houston. Jimmy has said that even though he might have had a DNF, it's a shout out for the mega 51 miles he ground out in absolutely horrid conditions. And I'm going to say 100%, it did not look as advertised in the brochures, that's for sure. I'd highly recommend popping over to listen to the guys talk about Mike's event and much more on their episode that came out earlier this week. Just to recant what that is, it's the Insta Runner Roundup podcast. So yeah, give them a follow, pop on over, give it a listen, see what you think. Now, to segue nicely, we have hopefully a future guest to the show, John Hughes, as he's shouting out the Power Rangers, some more of the Insta Runner Roundup podcast guys. Where we have John, we have AB, the Edinburgh Stunner, we have his pal Dale, we have Jimmy Bunter, and we have Mike Houston, who are going to be doing the upcoming Glasgow to Edinburgh this weekend, where they're all aiming for gold. And as far as I'm concerned, they're all more than capable of smashing that and much more than I think some of them are expecting. All eyes are going to be on the canal paths of watery peril from last year over the next couple of days by quite a few members of the Scottish running community, I'd say. Also, as promised, we have our lovely marathon, Bready Batten Bashing Petta, shouting out her pal Ultra Linny in return as her amazing pal heads into the GTE alongside the Power Rangers. Petta says that Lynn is the absolute best. I got to meet her briefly at the Loch Ness 24, and from the brief, the 200, 300 meters or so that I got to spend with her, she seemed like a lovely lady, and I would like to be able to meet her again very soon at another event. I'm going to echo those. The Glasgow to Edinburgh, although flat, is going to be a really tough race for some of the troops, but I have no doubt that they're all going to smash it. I know that AB especially has a few nerves, and that's to be expected, but if the lad can keep his head, I think he's going to be on for a flyer. He's going to achieve so much more than he thinks he's capable of. He knows he's going for gold. He knows he's going to achieve gold, but I personally could see him going so much further up the finishing order than I think he's expecting. Overall, though, it's gold all round for me anyway. It's a bit of a victory lap now, so on you go, guys. Smash it. Have a great time. What will be, will be. For the rest of the weekend, we have the AJ Bell Great Scottish Weekender and the Cardiff Half Marathon. So whether you're joining the likes of previous guests Michael Crawford in the half or Grace Nicol in the 10K in Glasgow, or Jace, the Edinburgh runner in Cardiff, I hope you have a great weekend, folks. Heads high, deep breaths. You're going to do amazing. But on that note, let's start to wrap up this Loch Ness monster of an episode. Thank you, as always, for tuning in today, downloading and streaming the podcast. I say it every week, but it will forever be the best way you can support the show, and I'm delighted that you all do so. If you enjoyed the pod and you would like to show your physical support, you can purchase one of our t-shirts from our merchandise partners over at Twisted Running. I'm not going to mention the pre-order this week. I have been in communication with them once again. I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed that maybe they'll be out before the end of the season, but we'll see what happens. If you want to give Twisted Running a follow, they are on Instagram. You can also find links to their website via there or by Googling it. You can also find a link to the website via our website, thepoint99podcast.com. The show is available on all major podcast platforms, like you're already aware because you're listening to it just now. It's also on our website via the inbuilt player on our episodes page. And then finally, like I say each week now, it's on YouTube. There's YouTube videos and there's YouTube podcasts. Finally, if you want to get in contact, you can do so by dropping us an email at thepoint99podcast@gmail.com. There's, I think, a contact form on our website, like I've mentioned, thepoint99podcast.com, or you can follow and contact us via Instagram at thepoint99podcast. If you want to follow myself, however, and give me a DM, you can do so on my running account at Mr_Steve_runs, like I say, for running content. Or if you want to follow me for anything else, it's at I'm_Mr_Steve. That's it for today. Bit of a monster amount of information, a lot of talking by me, especially when we have no guest. But hopefully we'll have a guest in episode 5. Until that time, though, until that rolls around, I hope you stay safe, enjoy your runs, and you will hear from me soon.